I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with pianist, composer, and violinist Conrad Tau. He has already had just an amazing career. Conrad, it's really wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's kind of hard to know where to start, actually, because you've accomplished so much, and you still have yet to celebrate your 19th birthday, which is coming up next month. I'm kind of curious about when you decided that this was going to be your career, or have you been working with music so long that it just seemed like a natural choice?
You know, I still haven't had a moment where everything crystallized and became clear, and it's sort of just my path was laid out in front of me, and I said, oh, I want to do this for the rest of my life. I haven't had that beautiful moment of clarity, and to be 100% honest, I kind of hope I never do. I was lucky enough to start playing the piano when I was 18 months old, and you know, that's before I could remember anything, and that's a nice feeling because I started early enough that it just seemed that to me that music was integral to my life from the beginning. And I like not necessarily feeling like this is going to be my career, never being 100% sure of that, because it encourages me to keep asking a lot of questions and to consider what I'm trying to say at all times.
Well, so many of us who have been inspired by classical music and work some way in the industry have tried to find a kind of magic formula to attract new listeners, not just young listeners, but people in their 40s, 50s who haven't had classical music in their lives. And it kind of seems like you've sort of cracked the code because you've really broken down a lot of the barriers and the little pigeonholes that music gets put into with your really diverse programs.
Well, I think that when it comes to reaching out to new listeners, sometimes the mistake that gets made is that listeners become thought of as demographics. So, for example, young audiences, I think more often than not, get considered through the lens of demographic analysis, and concert organizations end up asking, how do we get young audiences? But the implicit understanding there is that we need young audiences because they can fuel our audiences, and they can keep our replenishing our audiences, and that assumes that that the concert organization structure or the way that concerts are being presented or the way that the art is being contextualized is fine, is acceptable, or is working. And I think that the crucial thing is to be willing to question that and to wonder how can we change how can we change our conception of things. Sometimes it's not even a matter of presentation. Sometimes it comes from the artists themselves or from the initial starting point of like what am I trying to say with a program, and that's what I think I'm interested in, really trying to connect with people from the level of the immediate engagement with the art, with the music. And so that's always kind of been my way of thinking about it.
Well, this really leads nicely into a little conversation about your Unplay Festival that starts on June 11th in Brooklyn, because it seems as though that's exactly what you're doing with the three nights of really incredible programming. And I'd love to know a little bit, first of all, about how the festival came about.
Well, I was lucky enough in 2012 to receive an Avery Fisher Career Grant, and prior to that I was also named a 2012 Gilmore Young Artist. And these were two of the greatest honors I had received as a musician. And I was thinking about what to do kind of in the wake of that. And, you know, there were lots of options and there were lots of things that I was thinking about possibly doing, but eventually they all started to sound disturbingly conventional, or at the very least just kind of dull, just because what they would have done was, mainly maintain what I was currently doing. And I wanted to try something that could maybe upend what I was currently doing as a performer, or add something very, very different to what I was doing, since this seemed like a really great opportunity to try something risky for me, on an individual level, not necessarily even more than that. That's where it started. And then it developed into this larger conception, because thinking about creating a festival and creating a performance space, that became this very, very liberating experience where I felt like some of the personal individual thoughts and opinions I had about where music could go or perhaps where concerts could go, you know, where live performance could go, some of those ideas could be put into practice. That was what this became an opportunity to do. And so this festival developed over time, and the programming really came together beautifully. And I was able to, I am working with a wonderful group of artists who, some of them have been already working as musicians and doing groundbreaking things for decades now, and some of them are kind of just breaking into the scene now. And it's wonderful. It's very exciting. And it's exciting for me because it's finally putting some of the different facets of my own personal artistic identity together in a sort of tangible and, you know, identifiable way.
Well, what's so interesting about it is that just as though you're in the same way that your programs kind of travel back and forth between, well, standard repertoire pieces from Rachmaninoff and Ravel, you're exploring in the festival the different ways that music can interact and the different ways pieces can interact with each other. So it's, as you said, it's a microcosm of what you're doing, and sounds really, really interesting. I'm curious about the third night, which sounds like it's going to be a wonderful evening of really exploring almost like music in the future and what might be the standard repertoire pieces of the future.
Yeah, the third night is Hirstories, and it's sort of a combination of the first and second nights in terms of what it's considering, what it's thinking about. The whole festival is really about exploring and showcasing, I guess, in a way, music that helps articulate or kind of tries to articulate a narrative of its own, an alternative kind of narrative to the dominant understanding of what classical music means. And this final night is about, you know, direct engagement with historical narrative. It's about work that can kind of articulate its own self-determined history. And another crucial element for the festival is the internet, honestly. And I grew up with the internet. I was writing emails at the age of 4, and so that's become a crucial part of my understanding and my engagement with culture. And so each of the nights of Unplay corresponds in a way with a different kind of internet-driven or perhaps internet-raised way of thinking about culture. And the last night is responding to dominant socio-historical narratives of classical music or the dominant narratives that classical music aligns with. And then also corresponds with the internet's ability to articulate that self-determined history or identity. And so there's a lot of work that seems to directly interrogate what a concert performance can be or what a concert space can be. There's also music that directly engages with historical content like J. Edgar Hoover. I have a friend of mine wrote a piece that directly engages with you know, Chinese labor history in the U.S. And stuff like that. It's very, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, it really sounds incredible, and the social network aspect of it, and the internet sounds like it's going to be a really evolving component of it as well.
I hope so.
One of the pieces that everybody's so excited about is your work Iridescence for iPad and piano, and what I love about it is that it treats the iPad as a serious instrument, not a gimmick. You know, a lot of people do music with acoustic instruments and a little electronic thing on the side. But what I love about of your work is that there's a real interaction with the iPad and the piano, and I'm curious about how you put that together.
Well, I really wanted to write for the iPad in some capacity. I am a huge Björk fan, and I remember in 2011 she had this enormous project called that corresponded with her album Biophilia, which was a very, very in-depth interactive iPad app. And there were elements of that iPad app that that resembled instruments, and I was really interested in that idea. I had already interacted with iPad instruments in different capacities, and so I was extremely interested in the possibilities of the iPad as an instrument, because not not necessarily because it was the first time that you could use electronics in a tangible and interactive way, but because for the first time it seemed like these things were a little more accessible to a larger group of people. And so I really wanted to do something that wasn't just utilizing this new exciting technology, but did so in a way that wasn't overly complicated, I suppose. Because, I mean, I when I wrote the piece, I was still pretty unfamiliar with the nuts and bolts of working with electronics. And so the piece actually, you know, if I were to make the score available online and if someone, you know, had the app, which is, you know, not a free app, but it's not horribly prohibitively expensive exactly. It's the Reactable mobile app for the iPad. If I were to make the, they call it a table, which is what I play on the iPad. If I were to make that available for free download online, as well as a PDF of the score for free online, then anyone, you know, theoretically would be able to play it. And I loved that idea because, you know, for example, there's live processing of my piano playing, but it's done purely through the iPad's built-in microphone, which in a weird way is quite low-tech and lo-fi. and I kind of like that. I think there's an interesting almost contradiction there between hi-fi, lo-fi, you know, fancy technology and extremely simple, straightforward technology. So it's I like the way that these things interacted. And so this was a fun piece to explore all that. And the piece is called Iridescence, and it's about the fracturing of light, really. And it's about sort of how that phenomenon looks different depending on where your angle is or what perspective you're looking at things from. And I think that's an elegant way of looking at a lot of things, you know. And so I'm very happy. It closes off the album. And a music video just came out for it, which I'm also super excited about.
That is very cool. Did you produce that yourself, or was that done by an outside kind of artist and filmmaker and that kind of thing?
It was filmed by a local filmmaker here in Brooklyn.
Well, you mentioned the album, and that's the other component, because you'll also be celebrating your 19th birthday with your first release for EMI, which includes that, as well as Gaspard de la Nuit, which is an amazing realization of some poems. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice package, kind of your career up till now, kind of in a nutshell, I imagine.
Voyages, which is the name of the album. I mean, the album is a really wonderful exploration of a lot of themes that I have been considering for a long time. Gaspard, for example, is striking to me because of the intense surrealism of those poems as well as the music. You know, the ambiguity of Scarbo, for example. There are elements of those pieces that are fantastical and phantasmagoric and just really, really unexpected. And I was interested in making an album that, first of all, functioned as a whole as an album, because I have grown up really liking LPs and really enjoying sequencing as an art form. And I wanted to create something that seemed to have a flow to it. But at the same time, I also wanted to create something that didn't necessarily feel like it had a clear beginning and end. I didn't want to do something that just went from point A to point B. Because for me, going from point A to point B is a little bit straightforward and dull as a result. And I wanted to see what could happen if I got from point A to point B by going through point X, for example. I was more interested in what happened in between. And so a lot of these pieces deal with that, with sort of being in transit, whether that exists in a metaphorical way or if it's a little more of a literal conception. So these pieces kind of exist in dream spaces and these sort of liminal environments, which I think make them interesting. And I think that that's the mood I was going for here.
Oh, it's going to be great. And Conrad, it's been so wonderful to talk with you. And it sounds like you've got an amazing future ahead, whether music ends up being your career or not. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure here.